Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I'm Brian Nemhauser. It's a blue Friday. You can find us in the same place you can always find us at Hawk Blogger, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. And I want to thank you all before we get into introducing our weekly guest for all the new reviews over on Apple Podcasts. They are awesome. It made my day this morning. Lots of five-star reviews. I will say, I think one of you might have made a mistake. I'm hoping you did. We got this lovely review. I'm going to read it for you real quick. That says, outstanding Seahawks podcast. This podcast offers the best and most insightful Seahawks coverage available. A credentialed reporter, passionate fan, strikes the perfect balance between expert analysis and genuine enthusiasms. I could keep going. He says, this podcast is outstanding, all amazing, four-star review. Bellingham Seahawk, if you're out there, I think you meant to leave us a five-star review. Oh. Don't break the streak. Don't break the streak. All five-star reviews for months. Let's keep them going. Appreciate you. Let's bring in Mike Sanda, who's a big part of why we get those five-star reviews. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. I thought that you were going to say the guy got like a one accidentally. Oh, you're quibbling over a four. I mean, it's still a really good
thing. You have no idea how hard it is to move up fractionally in Apple Podcast reviews.
Gotcha.
It is.
On there and leave a five. I'll make sure it's a five, not a four.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that because, you know, Mike Salk and I have an ongoing battle on this because Brock and Salk are at, I think, a 4.6 rating. And when I got to four, they've been trying to get to 4.7 for years, literally. So I got to make sure I keep that going. Mike, first of all, did you have a wonderful Christmas?
We did. Yeah. Yeah, we did. We had our sons and their significant others over on Christmas Eve. You know, juggling around some work schedules of folks. So we had a Christmas Eve. That's kind of when we do our presents. And then yesterday they were at their significant other's plate houses, you know, doing that type of stuff. So it was just Kim and I hanging out with our dog. And we had a nice kind of cozy day. No work. I didn't do any work, which is progress for me. You know, 10 years ago, I would have been sweating over something and I'm not. Yeah. I had a great day. Went for a walk in the morning and, you know, it was great. Like, I follow the league really closely. I wasn't sure what game was on in what slot and what we were like, oh, they're on Netflix. Like, we were figuring that out as the games were just about starting. So to me, that's a great sign. That feels like, hey, that's how it should be on that type of a day. And instead of the, you know, as much as we love family, instead of having 50 people around, we were wearing sweatpants the whole day yesterday. That was glorious. Really nice. So how about you?
We had a really nice Hanukkah. It was nice to be, you know, on the other side of it. We did some projects yesterday. My wife cleaned up one part of the kitchen. I was responsible for the pantries, gonna have make some dump runs, so kind of a winter cleaning thing. And then we ended up watching some old movies last night, like old meaning like Sleepless in Seattle was on HBO. It just happened. We turned the channel and it was on there. So we would like hadn't watched that forever. And it was bizarre. It was kind of like our story. It actually came out in 93 when we were in DC, and the movie starts with her in DC and they end up in Seattle, which is all what happened to Rachel and I. But as I got into bed last night, Mike, that was one of my favorite parts of the day. I opened my phone just to scroll around and I see a certain somebody who got a Christmas present, I think, and looked pretty darn happy. What on earth do you need with that propane-based flamethrower?
It's totally not needed. Here's how this came about. So my oldest son, is a new homeowner in the last year. So he's got all these needs for like kind of Home Depot-y type stuff, you know? So the theme was kind of manliness, like jokingly manliness. So we were like, my wife and I went over to Home Depot. We got like one of those big Home Depot buckets, you know, like the orange ones. And we just filled it with things like, you know, a stud finder wall, you know, those little anchors in the wall, all those things you're going to need randomly when you suddenly want to hang a picture or whatever. Yeah. So we had this big thing. I said, let's just continue on the manliness theme with anyone else. My wife had seen like this on social media somewhere. I'm like, what is that? I said, okay, we're totally getting him that because he'll love it. And I said, but I want one. She's like, what do you use that for? And so I went and researched him. You can burn out weeds in your driveway. You okay. can hear a steak extra. You could obviously do like a creme brulee. And it is ridiculous. I'm not saying this is nice. You have a little dial on the top. So you could have just a little bit of a flame reasonable, but I turned that, and I'm not kidding you. Like my youngest son's girlfriend is on the couch. She's like genuinely afraid. She's leaning away because this thing is coming out. You can see this much of it. You know, it might be more. And I said, no, I'm doing it in the house. So I struck my sort of Terminator pose, you know, and had this thing going. And then I had to take it out in the garage and I fired it up one more time. And it's like loud, you know, it's like, sounds like, it sounds like a rocket. And well, then assembled it. I don't know when I'm going to use it again, but it was not super expensive. They're like $40 or something.
Yeah.
I
have to admit, I never expected to scroll and see Mike Sando with a flamethrower as I went to bed. It was fantastic. And the face you were giving us was perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect. I will tell you, if you use that for creme brulee, you know,
I tell you that
I've got the little guy for like the kitchen version of that. That's like that's meant to, you know, burn a hole in a frozen lake or something.
Totally, completely. But those little ones used for creme brulee, I hate them. They like work. They're not great quality. At least the ones we've had. They're like you're trying to hold that butane thing on the straw thing.
Yeah.
Did it fill? And then it repeaters out. No, this thing here, we might have to take it out on the deck or the driveway to do the creme brulees. But we're gonna do it.
I love it. Well, I have something to admit to you as we talk to about some football stuff here is I didn't watch a lick of football yesterday. I wasn't that interested in any of the games to begin with. I also was kind of committed to, you know, being home and being present. But I looked at some of the scores and some of the results and I was like, my God, man, these are some bad results, even for some of the teams that won. I mean, Let's start with the Detroit game because that is just a shocking, shocking result to lose to Max Brosmer. I thought, oh, maybe he did something well. I went and checked the box score. He had like 50 yards passing, and I was
had negative yards passing as a team. When you do net passing, which counts sack yards, they were -3 and won the game.
Oh my God! So what do you do in Detroit? Like, is there anything to take from this? Where is it like blow this thing up? What's going on?
Yeah. So I think this the way this season is ending with some of these teams that have been just, you know, the best teams. I think you have reckonings more often when this happens to Kansas City. Now, maybe they're going to use the Mahomes injury as their excuse, but I don't think so. Like when you're clearly going to miss the playoffs or you're not that good and you fasten yourself as a contender, I think then you have to. It forces you to honestly evaluate. Detroit has to honestly evaluate. Baltimore may need to honestly evaluate. Someone's, you know, if John Harbaugh may lose his job or certainly in Detroit, they're going to have a new offensive coordinator for sure. And maybe they're going to feel like that's enough with some, I think there's a little bit of a earned arrogance in Detroit, right? Where they may act like they had some bad luck with injuries, but they're going to get a new coordinator. And maybe they do run it back and are better, you know, but I think this is opportunity to really assess and make some significant changes to upgrade your team.
Yeah, it's a scary place for a Lions fan who, you know, just a few years ago, it was like, this is the most talented team in football. They're complete. They're young. They're growing. They're well coached. And almost got to the Super Bowl, but didn't. And I like, I don't know how many times this has to happen, Mike, where I assume a young and good team is going to remain young and good for a few years. But they've pretty much last year, I think injuries really, really hurt them, but they've kind of been in decline. And
well,
just from a
their offensive line
standpoint, I don't know what you're supposed to do if you don't quite get to the mountaintop. Like, do you tear it back down? Like, it's hard to keep it evergreen the way you have to.
And they've been paying everybody, all these guys, as they come up. So, you know, I think their offensive line atrophied. You know, I really do. Obviously, Frank Ragnow retired. And some of those guys, are more than just a player. They're a heart and soul of your team. You know, and I think when you have Jared Goff, we know that it can look really good or really bad. He's not going to make up for it when it's bad around him, right? He doesn't move well. He can look kind of frazzled and overwhelmed when the game gets sped up for him. But, and that's what was happening when he was with the Rams a little bit, when they weren't quite as good on the offensive line. They didn't have quite the team around him, you know, up front. But when you put it really nice around him, no one throws darts better, right? He really can throw the ball and he's outstanding. But I think they could be in that situation where, how quick can you make your line be that good again? Are they going to move Penei Sewell to the other side? You know, Frank Ragnow tried to come back during the season and had a grade 3 hamstring injury he didn't even know about, which is unbelievable. Yeah.
But yeah, like, that's a hard thing to not know about.
But that, you know, they drafted a couple guys sort of, you know, outside the first round offensive linemen last year that they were high on going into the year. But, you know, I don't know. Can they get it good enough on the offensive line so that Jared Goff can, you know, win playoff games? I think that's really what they need to see. Because you look at the season stats, Goff's probably in the top 5 for all the passing stats, I would think.
Yeah, and part of the reason I'm interested in that storyline is not just the impact on the playoffs, which, by the way, based off of yesterday's results, I think every playoff spot in the NFC other than the winner of the NFC South has been decided. The Packers are in, the Rams are in, the 49ers are in, Bears, Eagles, Seahawks, and now it's either going to be the Panthers or the Bucks. So that's one part.
Yeah.
But the other part, Mike, is, you know, there's a little bit, you talk about Jared Goff and you kind of think about Sam Darnold a little bit, right? Like, can make all the throws. Does he need to have like the right things around him for it to work? And I look at Jared Goff and I'm like, my God, does he need the best offensive line in football? Because Sam Darnold doesn't have the best offensive line in football. I don't even think they have as good of an offensive line as the Lions have had most of this year. So how do you see those two guys?
Well, okay, so let's just go in a vacuum and not pretend like yesterday didn't happen. I mean, Jared Goff this season completes 68% of his passes for 4,200 yards. He averages almost 8 per attempt with 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and 107 rating, 0.17 EPA per pass play for all the nerds out there, including me. I mean, you'd take that every year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a borderline. You put his numbers next to Stafford's numbers, I mean, they look about the same, really very similar, right around 8 yards per attempt, right around 4,200 yards. You know, the passer ratings 107 to 112. Stafford's better in the EPA, but that's a pretty good season you'd sign up for, right?
Of course.
Now they're 8-8, so they got to figure out, okay, why isn't this translating? I felt like they did have injuries. I know that again, but there's a certain point. You know, as far as those two guys, I mean, I think that they both do have the turnover worthy play gene. I always felt like Matt Ryan had it too. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Third quarter of a close game, like, you might get one on them, right?
Yeah.
I feel that. Whereas I feel like some of the other guys, some of the real top guys, maybe can avoid that a little more, or they're so good that they overcome it if it happens. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Where I feel like Darnold, Goff, they can do that, but they really need their defense to weather it for them more than anything. They're not going to necessarily make up for it. Now Darnold had a nice make up for it against the Rams, but they don't win the game without the punt return touchdown, right?
Of course. And
It's not like he's put on his shoulder. He did a nice job when he had to, but it wasn't like he's not really making up for it. The defense has to keep you in it, or special teams makes a big play.
For sure. And I think the Seahawks are kind of in this spot where a lot of fans are curious about, like, how Sam Darnold and teams with Sam Darnold like players can hold up when you get into the playoffs and beyond. And you and I kind of talked about this. I don't know if you had a chance to do the research, just about where things are in terms of teams that do turn the ball over, but also have really good point differentials, and how they kind of survive, or do they, when it comes to the playoffs.
Well, I did look at that, you know, so there's only been, I put the Seahawks on this thing. In fact, I think there's been, let me just see the turnover margin here. Super Bowl teams, I did this since 2002, which to me is kind of the, you know, 8-4 team divisions era. I think that makes it a little more equal. So there's been five teams that made the Super Bowl with a negative differential and
a negative turnover differential.
Negative turnover differential. And so the 2022 Chiefs won the Super Bowl at -3. The 2015 Broncos won the Super Bowl at -4. The 2003 Panthers lost the Super Bowl to New England at -5. The 2007 Giants won the Super Bowl at -9. And the 2023 Chiefs won it at -11. So I guess that's 4-1 they went in the Super Bowl when they had the negative differential.
That's crazy.
On the season. I think some of those teams, though, are very different from, like, Seattle's point per game margin is 10.9. And, you know, some of those other teams, even like the 2023 Chiefs are 4.5. The 07 Giants are 1.4. The 03 Panthers are 1.3. The 2015 Broncos are 3.7. 2022 Chiefs are 7.5. And then you've got this Seattle team would be number one among those in point margins. So you'd think they'd have an even better chance than those teams, right? They'd be a better overall team, you would think.
Yeah.
So I thought that's a little bit interesting. There were three teams that made the Super Bowl with even point differentials, and they didn't win the Super Bowl. That was 2013 Broncos, and they lost to Seattle, obviously. The 21 Bengals, who lost a very close game to the Rams. And then the 08 Cardinals, who took a lead over Pittsburgh in the final 2 minutes with a long touchdown pass to Larry Fitzgerald and then lost the game. But those teams, other than the 13 Broncos, who had a 12.9 point differential, the other two, the Bengals and the Cardinals, were low. So I think that's kind of interesting for Seattle that, hey, why not, right? It hasn't been a killer to be negative. If you got there, you were good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen it. It sounds like based on what you're reviewing there isn't a lot of examples of teams that have this kind of point differential and have a negative turnover margin.
So, right. So there's been 46 Super Bowl teams since 2002. That'd be 2002 to 2004 season. That makes sense, right? About 23 seasons, 46 teams. Mm-hmm. And five of them had a negative point turnover margin. So, you know, you're 41 of the 46 did not. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. Because sometimes that's also indicative of other issues with your team when you have a negative, when your defense isn't getting enough of them or, you know, whatever, or you're sloppy with the ball. So I think it correlates usually with bad teams. And I don't think Seattle's a bad team. You're an oddity type team, right? When you're that good with that type of a point differential, that's unusual.
So, I mean, the reality is you don't want to have a turnover problem, period. Like that's just not debatable or worth even discussing. The question becomes, I mean, the Seahawks have won 12 of 15 games with that turnover pattern, and they have the number one point differential in the NFL over that. And you can also say the three games that they lost, those were all very close games. It wasn't like anyone's run away from them. So what do you take away from all of that information when you kind of assess this team?
Yeah. The thing I don't like about their turnover differential is it's not a product of the greatest show on turf being the best offense ever. You know what I mean? Where you're prolific and you're so good that the turnovers don't matter because you're so good on the rest of your drives. None of us feels like that's Seattle, right?
Right.
So I think that's where, hey, these possessions are precious against a really good team. Can you afford to do it in those games? And like, I would love to know, and I'm going to look at it right now because I can, like Seattle's turnover margin games, turnover margin. So Seattle is in its losses. Seattle's -5. Okay. And Seattle's -4 for the season. So, you know, their record is 2-3 when they lose the turnover margin. That's a little bit more of a way to look at it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to have that type of game? Because it's really 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of their games, they didn't lose the turnover battle. 1, 2, 3, 5 games they did. So it's not like they're doing that every game. I think we have to be careful when we look at the final end of season numbers, like, what's been important to them in the games they've won and lost. Are they losing the turnover? It's like they're losing the turnover battle 15 times and winning 12 games.
Right.
Right. It's actually, I think part not of a high percentage of their games that they're losing the turnover battle. But yeah, they, I think they're minus three times. And you know what? They beat Houston and the Rams. They're 2-1 They're minus three.
Yes, that's part. That's part of what's on my mind is they've had these negative three turnover games, and they honestly should have won all three of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think really for them, it's just not that complicated. Is how hard is it to not have a minus three game?
I mean, against the Rams, apparently not that easy.
Totally agree. And the scary part is that I think they fooled Darnold in the last couple in the last game. It wasn't just him being careless; they got him.
They did. They did. I look at those two turnovers in that last game very differently. And actually, I generally think that's less concerning than what we saw in the first game. And more coachable. I also think that the two turnovers in that game were different than each other. Like the first one was definitely a got him. The second one, I mean, they hit him, and I'm not sure, you know, other than him taking the sack. Yes, they got him, but that was just, you know, that's on the offensive line as well. In terms of what happened there. So, anyway, I find it fascinating the kind of approach this team has had to take. And now you go into these final two games, Mike, and you got Carolina this weekend, and there's been kind of an interesting vibe with at least the reporters I've talked to in Carolina. They're not sure how much the Panthers should like play their hardest this week versus like resting guys, because they assume that Miami's going to lose with Quinn Ewers to the Bucks, and the Panthers know that they're going to have to beat the Bucks in the final week.
To me, it's a tough one when to go into it saying, yeah, they're going to beat the Dolphins. Can you do that?
No, there's no way you can do that. Now, what if the scoreboard at halftime shows 24-3, you know, 24-7 Bucks? Do you consider like giving Derek Brown some time off?
I think it's too
like,
hard to do. I just think it's too hard to turn on and off like that. I mean, I think you can do it in the fourth quarter, depending on how your game's going. But I think you probably just want your team to play the game.
That's what I would assume. And it does remind me a little bit of, you know, you remember when you were covering the Seahawks back in the day, like there's been some memorable trips to Carolina. And you know, some of them are more recent, but there was a time where it felt like the Seahawks were going to Carolina every year. There was like playing Cam Newton there, like all those back and forths. And it feels like it's been a while now that they've gone back there. And the Panthers are one of those teams that has started to turn things around. I think I heard that if they make the playoffs and if they have a winning record, it'll be the first time since like 2018 or 2007, like something like it's been a long time.
So it's funny, you know, one of the things that you'd asked me, you know, we'd look at was, I mean, we still will probably is like, hey, how does a top three offense do against a top three defense?
Yes.
But I'm going to get to use this for Carolina because I was looking at this the other week. Carolina a couple weeks ago was 25th on each side of the ball in EPA per play. And I'm going to look right now. Carolina is 23rd in offensive EPA per play and 24th in defense EPA per play. And they, you know, have a winning record or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is not a good team.
No.
Now, Carolina has pretty good run defense. They've improved that. But to me, this is a game where the Seattle defense needs to go in there and be like, it's a lot different than it's not Cam Newton over there. When you go out on the field and you're like, oh my gosh, that guy could play defensive end for us.
Right.
They're playing the opposite of that. Bryce Young.
Yes, they are. They could not have gone more opposite
and knock him around and be like, I can't believe how little this guy is.
Yeah.
And make it that game where the big defense comes in and just, it's not that competitive from that standpoint.
I want to. I didn't expect you to have the top three versus top three. Are you ready to talk about that today?
Yeah. So I think it's happened four times. So you were asking us like, hey, what happens in a Super Bowl when you have a top three offense face a top three defense? And we know that the Seahawks Broncos of 2013 was one such game, right?
Right. One versus one in that case.
I'm seeing four of those in top three, meaning an EPA per play on offense or defense. So I'm seeing four of those in our era, which is kind of the divisional realignment era, 2002 to now. And the defense is three and defense, I guess it's two and two. Defense is two and two. So we would have the 2002 Buccaneers Raiders Super Bowl. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big win for the Buccaneers defense. So that's the top three defense wins. And the Raiders were kind of a mess. Their center, Barrett Robbins, went AWOL the day before the game in Mexico. And they had problems. Couldn't protect. 06, the Colts beat the Bears. 29-17. Now, that's Peyton Manning.
That's a Rex Grossman.
Yeah. But those Bears were super elite defense special teams.
Yeah.
I think they scored on the opening kickoff, didn't they?
I think so. Yeah.
Kick return by Hester, maybe, or something. But okay, that is what it is. We said the Seahawks Broncos. We know the defense won that one. And then I believe the Chiefs beat the 49ers after the 2019 season when they were both second. Chiefs offense was second against the 49er defense was second, and the offense won. So that's our two and two. I don't know how many of those apply to what we think the Seahawks are, you know?
Yeah.
Seahawks are probably a little bit more like the 2013 Seahawks, right?
Well, probably the debate that goes on. There's people that would say that, and there's people that would say they're more like that 2006 Bears team.
Oh, yeah, depending on what you think of the quarterback. I mean,
right.
Yeah, I just think that Darnold's numbers and efficiency, it's a little different era, but I would think it'd be way better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, can I show you my little coding project from yesterday?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, you're talking about this. It gets me excited.
I'm not going to show you all of it, but I'm going to show you this part. So I wanted to create
a little get you back on the screen because I was looking at that stuff. Hold on one sec here.
Okay.
I think you're going to be here. Yep, I got you.
All right. So I wanted to have a tool where I could compare different parts of like PFF grades from one team to another. So I could say take the Carolina Panthers offense and the Seahawks defense and show me how they've graded out week over week and see the trends. So you could kind of see the Seahawks, how the Seahawks defense is playing versus the Carolina offense. Or, you know, I could just go overall grades, see how those have looked. I can change this to any team. I can go to an overall matchup analysis and say, give me the Carolina Panthers versus the Seahawks, and I can kind of match up offense versus defense all the way through special teams and then total up the points of who has the biggest advantage. I had a lot of fun kind of going.
Go back to the first one. So the first one, when you had the two teams selected, offense, defense, there's only one line. So what are we looking at?
Oh, you're probably not able to see it because it's a dark blue line.
Oh, yeah. I see it. Yes. Yeah.
Can you see it better now?
Yeah, I see it now. Yeah, you just got to change that to.
Yes. Some of the visual.
I got it now. It was just because I'm watching. I've got multiple big screens, but I'm watching it on my little laptop.
Yes.
16-inch screen. So I didn't see it.
So like I could take, for example, their pass blocking against the Seahawks pass rush. And see how that's kind of gone over time. Right. And how it's gone lately. You know, you could see that there's a gap there and there's been a gap, but some decent stuff. The pass
their
blocking
pass was actually better than I would, you know, you might've thought. So that's pretty
exactly,
good.
Exactly. So I've now got a whole bunch of these reports, that I can play with and, man,
love it. So did that just take you one day to do?
Yeah, it took me about a half a day to do. Had to pull some data and then like build out the reports and have to figure out exactly what I wanted to see. And
did you use AI to help you?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
If you had tried to do this before, you could have done this before on your own, right? Could you have done it?
No way.
Okay.
0% chance. I mean, I would have needed to have gone to get classes that I have not. I mean, I did used to be an engineer, but that was a pretty.
I wasn't sure if you knew those languages or stuff because AI just makes it so freaking good to be able to do this stuff.
I mean, I'm at the point now where I've got a setup where I can basically ask a question about any NFL data from like 1999 on. Yep. And if it's about a player, I can get PFF like grading information. Like, yeah, it's pretty powerful, man. Like, I'm able to really do research I could not do before.
Hey, you know, that top three offense, top three defense. I could do that. Normally that wouldn't be too hard. I could do an expert and rank them. I AI'd that a few minutes before the show, and I was, but then the key to that is like, I'll be able to catch, like, I know enough that if it totally botched something.
Yes.
So, you know, that's a little bit of a disclaimer. Like, I would not, if I was publishing that in The Athletic, I would go through and, you know, I would go through and vet it myself.
For but, sure.
You know, for our purposes, it passed the smell test and looked good. And then the other one I actually did do the work on, you know, on the turnover margins and all of that. But that's like child's play compared to the coding that's needed to do some of these other things, like this type of a project. It's a godsend to be able to get it to do it for you.
It's the closest thing to, and I won't spend too much time because I know there's some very strong feelings about this in my audience, but it's the closest thing to the Matrix where you're like, I want this skill, add it to me. And then you can just go out and do it.
It feels like cheating, and it feels like, it does. I just kind of want to do this. I've got like so many queries going on the side of like these little things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, you still do have to know what you're doing and have to know what you want to know and be able to spot when it's wrong. All those things are still true, but
absolutely.
It's certainly powerful. All right, Mike. I guess last thing for you, anything that's got your eye going into this weekend that you're gonna be watching as you get ready for your pick six column?
Yeah, to me, Houston and the Chargers is a playoff preview type of a game. I think these are two teams that have kind of been hanging around with good defenses, question marks on their offenses. Certainly the offensive line situation for the Chargers has been dire. There's been a lot of talk about, Herbert and should he actually be an MVP candidate. And I've held off a little bit because I've looked at, now they did beat the Eagles and the Chiefs, but let's be honest, those are not the prime Eagles and Chiefs. Like, I've kind of been waiting for this last couple game stretch for the Chargers and just kind of like, okay, I admire what they've done this year, but you know, Justin Herbert's kind of been one of those guys, like, we want to see him win the playoff game or that type of a thing. And so that game really intrigues me because it just feels like there's enough on the line for both these teams got to play. This game's important, and we're going to see something that we could see again in the playoffs. So that very much interests me on two teams that I kind of monitor from afar. I feel like I wish I knew them better a little bit. I need to dig into them and do a little more work on them. And this game will force me to do that.
If I can ask you one more thing, Mike, just about the games yesterday, the Broncos struggling with the Chiefs what do you make of the Broncos team? Because I keep thinking, man, they got this great defense. You know, they've got a good offensive coach. And then they just like, they're not impressive.
Their defense has not been good the last. So going into this game, they lost to the Jaguars. And I had looked then since week 11, the Jaguars were number one in defensive EPA per play. And the Broncos were 29th, totally against what everybody thinks of the Broncos. So their defense has definitely slipped. I think that it's the glue that holds everything together and lets it look okay offensively and lets them have some of those comeback wins they've had. Remember, the defense is always a huge part of a comeback because you're behind, the other team can't score. But I think that we're definitely seeing cracks. I don't buy everything there. I feel like some of these game results just flipping the other way, like they're inevitably going to do next year. We're going to see some of the issues. I think Sean Payton's got a very old school style of coaching that, I think it's great when you're winning, but I'm not so sure, when it turns. I think Kansas City last week was a disgrace. Their first game without Mahomes, they didn't even compete. And so from that standpoint, I actually felt like they showed up a little more in this game. And I give the Chiefs a little bit of credit for that. I mean, I thought they were abysmal in the week before and concerningly so. Like, that's ridiculous, but they kind of bounced back. So maybe I give them a little bit of a credit. It's a short week for everybody. And the questions I have for Denver, I still have. The record doesn't change that to me. I think they have the worst. They may have the worst point differential of any team that's only lost three games, something like that, in a season, that sort of a thing. So I'm not buying them. I think they could be a one and done team in the playoffs.
Well, Mike, I do, before I let you go, I got to just make sure next time we see you, I'm hoping that this is not what you look like. So
my flamethrower is way better than that one. I should get it. I should have it in here. My wife would be like, are you running the flamethrower again?
For old Fire Marshal Bill fans, let's hope Mike is great. Not looking like that. Mike, man, thank you so much. Have a great rest of your weekend. We'll talk next week.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. That is Mike Sando of The Athletic. Great stuff as always. And yeah, I mean, there were some confusing results yesterday. It was hard for me to get interested in watching any of those games. And the fact that the Broncos barely beat the Chiefs in the state, like the zombie Chiefs that were out there, was, I mean, if you're a Broncos fan, that's got to be pretty concerning. You know, I think they ended up winning on at the end of the game. And they needed, I think, Chris Jones to jump off sides on a play that they were going to take a delay a game and then kick a field goal and turned into a touchdown, you know, to give them the final margin. I mean, Chris Aludicon was the quarterback, and it's not like he played well. He was 13 for 22, 66 yards. He averaged 3 yards per throw. That's not good. They didn't run the ball well. They had 7 carries for 38 yards for Kareem Hunt and 9 carries for 32 yards for Pacheco. But that was enough to basically be neck and neck with the 13-3 Broncos. Yeah, I mean, Bo Nix was 26 of 38 for 182 yards. He only averaged 4.8 yards per pass through an interception. So I am kind of just curious. That Broncos team's one that I'm curious about because I do have a lot of respect for that defense. As you look at the AFC right now, I mean, who's the team to beat in the AFC? You know, if you go to the standings, you're talking about the Texans, who have been playing pretty well of late. You've got the Jags, who just went in and beat up the Broncos. You've got the Patriots, who have, you know, prodigy Drake May at quarterback. I don't think you can believe in the Steelers or the Chargers. Maybe you still believe in the Bills, who are 11-4 with Josh Allen with that awful run defense. I don't know who I would pick. I might pick the Patriots as it currently stands as the team that I think has the highest quality of football that they're playing. And of course, they've had the easiest schedule of anybody, and it's not really been that close. So maybe they haven't really been tested. The Bills did beat them recently. That required a pretty big comeback. Yeah, it's hard to say. It's hard to say. And as the Texans have started to play better, I will tell you, I did not exit that Texans game. Like, going into the Texans game, I didn't think about Houston or the Texans at all. I mean, I watched some of their games. I like C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson and all that stuff. But I didn't really pay attention to them. And I certainly didn't know much about their fan base or care about the fan base one way or another. No ill will or positive feelings. After that game, I'm not a fan. Not a fan of the Tech. Like, the Texans fans seem to think everything was about them. They seem to have an unreasonably like positive perspective on how important they are in the NFL world order. And I left the game, the Seahawks played against them, as like, the Seahawks clowned you. Like, they were not good in that game. They turned the ball over three more times than you, gave up a strip sack touchdown. And still it looked like, I mean, the Seahawks ended up winning only by, what was it? 8 points. Something like that. But that was a late touchdown by the Texans. It was like 27-13 or whatever it was before that, 27-12. Yeah, the Seahawks, Sam Darnold, JSN made Derek Stingley look not so great. So I don't know. I was worried going into that game that defense was going to be exactly what would give the Seahawks trouble. The Seahawks offense was really good in that game. Sam Darnold, for the most part, was really good in that game. So I don't know. I think the AFC is kind of an interesting one to try to assess. And for what it for what it's worth, it doesn't really matter until the Seahawks get to the Super Bowl, assuming that they can get to the Super Bowl. If you haven't given the show a like and click subscribe, please do. I would greatly appreciate it. If you haven't gone over to simplyseattle.com, now is a great time to do it. Get some post holiday deals. HawkBlogger 15 is your code. Get you 15% off. Get some great Seahawks gear, Mariners, whoever you like from Seattle Sports, seattlesports.com. Also, get the Sleeper app. Download the Sleeper app, and you get $20, no deposit. Plus, first-time users, if you use promo code Hawks, you'll get up to $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational in over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. Okay. There are a couple of, I think there were some super chats. Let me double check those over on Venmo. And I appreciate folks that do the Venmo super chats. Some people don't go to YouTube, so they're not able to super chat in YouTube. And some people just want to make sure that 100% of their super chat goes to us as opposed to 30% going to Google. But for what it's worth, we appreciate super chats wherever they come from. So here are the two super chats we've got. Scott McLean says, thank you for all your hard work covering the Seahawks. Merry Christmas. Well, that is very nice of you, Scott. Appreciate it. Amit Guha says, hey, Brian, happy holidays to you and the HB fam. Who are some sleeper impact players for the playoffs? I'm thinking Mills could add some nice depth to what seems like a potentially wavering tired D-line. And same with T-Knight for the linebacker room. Thanks and much love. Well, thank you, Amit. I think Riley Mills is the clear answer there. He's on the thumbnail for the show today because he's one of the guys to watch in this game. I think he showed something, even if it was only six snaps against the Rams. This is a chance for him to, I think he's going to see 15 to 20 snaps in this game, assuming that he plays okay in those snaps. If he struggles, I think they'll reduce it again. But I think he has an opportunity to keep some of the Seahawks' best players, Byron Murphy, Leonard Williams, Jaron Reed, fresher, which is going to be really big in the playoffs for sure. And the other guy that I'd maybe call out if he were to return, and it's not guaranteed he will, is Torrey Horton. That's a guy that certainly has been an impactful player when he's been available. He's never played a game with Rashid Shaheed because he got injured the same time that Rashid Shaheed was traded for. And like, they just swapped everything. They swapped as receivers. They swapped as kick returners. All that just happened seamlessly. Miraculously, and there's still a chance, you know, that Torrey Horton comes back. Mike McDonald did not have any updates on him, good or bad, this week. So that's one. I'd also, Elijah Arroyo will be due to come back, I believe, in the playoffs. I think that could help. Obviously, Charles Cross, you know, it does not look like he's going to play this week. Neither does Kobe Bryant. And we'll find out if, you know, how soon those guys will be back. Neither one of those guys are going on IR. Mike McDonald confirmed that again this week. So, yeah, I think that's kind of where that stands. And then I wanted to do, where is it? there were so many nice reviews. I'm not going to read them all, but I want to read a few of these because they are awesome. They're awesome. And even Bellingham Seahawk, who I really appreciate. If you can bump that to a five-star review, that would be great. Go in and edit that. But that was a very, very nice review that you wrote, and it helped my morning. So where to start? I mean, we've got this is from Rooftop Fiddler. I have not read all these, so I'm just reading them live. Best football podcast out there. I've been a Seahawks fan since 2006, and I wish I discovered Brian's podcast earlier than this season. I love all the detailed analytics he brings in, as well as the insightful regular guests such as Matt Hasselback. I love that I have a daily Seahawks auditory home in Hawk Blogger Mornings and Real Hawk Talk. Well, that is super nice. Let's get one more. This one comes from Ben D, a lot of E's on the end of D, says deep, nerdy, and key. I like that. I was out wandering in the world of Hawks pods, and I have found a home with the depth of analysis. It's a great mix of deep analysis, banter, and speculation. Brian brings his passion and knowledge to the world here, and I greatly appreciate it. Well, there are a bunch more, and super appreciate all of you. We're at a 4.7 on Apple Podcast. Maybe eventually we can dare to dream. We will get to a 4.8 and higher, but for now, you guys just help me start my day off the right way, and I really, really appreciate it. So let me see if there's anything else I missed over here. I don't think so. I don't think so. So like what I'm planning on doing the rest of the day, I'm going to keep messing around with my reports that I'm running. I may be heading over to the VMAC for the Mike McDonald press conference middle of the day to get final injury reports. Then I will be flying out to Carolina tomorrow morning. So there will not be a Seahawks Saturday episode tomorrow. Sorry about that. I don't think there'll be anything worth me recording a separate episode for you guys on, but if I think of something, I'll do it. And then Sunday, we will have the game. I will be there for the post-game report, post-game show that I'll do from the field after the Seahawks play against Carolina. So all that's coming up, and then we start the final week. So I'm sure we will talk to Grant Cohen next week and others as we prepare for what will be a really big final game for the Seahawks. All right. Have a great rest of your Friday. Appreciate all of you. Take care. That'll do it.